Revelation chapter 12. We have spoken and explained the woman to be Jerusalem, particularly Jerusalem that's in heaven, the new Jerusalem, though having its effect upon the Jerusalem that is here on earth, as we'll go on to see as she flees from the dragon. And last time, we spoke about the male child that she gave birth to. Isaiah 66 makes it very clear that this is the nation of Israel, made up of the 12 tribes that are present in the tribulation time. And with the 12,000 from each of the tribes that are sealed, the seal of God. But now we're going back a little bit to verse 3 in Revelation chapter 12, and we're reflecting on the dragon that is here mentioned. So Revelation 12, verse 3. Let's just begin with verse 1. And there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head crown of 12 stars. And she, being with child, cried, travailing in birth, and pained to be delivered. And there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads, and 10 horns, and 7 crowns upon his heads. And his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven, and did cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman, which was ready to be delivered, for to devour her child as soon as it was born. And she brought forth a man-child, who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up unto God and to his throne. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared of God, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angels, and prevailed not, neither was there a place found any more in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent, called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the world, the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, Now has come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. And they loved not their lives unto the death. Therefore rejoice, ye heavens, and ye that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil is come down unto you, having great wrath, because he knoweth that he hath but a short time. And when the dragon saw that he was cast unto the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child. And to the woman were given 2 wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished for a time, and times, and half of time, from the face of the serpent. And the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away of the flood. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth. And the dragon was wroth with the woman, and went to make war with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. May the Lord bless the reading of his word to our hearts today. So today we want to consider the red dragon, the great red dragon, here described in chapter 12. We have come quite a ways in the book of Revelation already. one may look at the pages and say we're at least halfway through, and it's taken this amount of time to finally introduce the true enemies that are here in the book of Revelation. Now, in part, we've seen the world of unbelievers as they've been afflicted by God's plagues upon the earth in vengeance upon the world. So we've seen the enemy already, but more defensively, not necessarily in an offensive way, not attacking the people of God. Certainly not the scary parts that so many people dread of the mark of the beast and not being able to buy things and being killed if you don't bow down to the image and so forth. So it's taken this long to focus on the true enemies here, or the personalities here of the dragon, the beast, the second beast, the false prophet, and ultimately the Babylon, the whore, that's later in the book. But of course, as we come to the dragon, we do remember that he was already mentioned in Revelation back with the seven churches, as he caused problems for them back in John's day. So just going back to Revelation chapter 2:9, Revelation 2:9-10, I know thy works and tribulation and poverty, but thou art rich. I know the blasphemy of them which say they are Jews and are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. Fear none of those things which thou shalt suffer. Behold, the devil shall cast some of you into prison, that you may be tried, and ye shall have tribulation 10 days. Be thou faithful unto death, and I will give thee a crown of life. And this is just one of the seven churches that the devil was seeking to overcome back in the days of John. The devil, of course, has been active throughout all of church history, and he is the great enemy that we all face from time to time. Let's consider then how this dragon is described in verse 3. And there appeared another wonder, or as we said last time, or with the woman, another sign, another vision, something you could see. And there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, a great red dragon. This dragon is described as great, which refers to how large it is there in the heavens, and it's described as red. You may wonder if red has some kind of spiritual significance, but really it just means the color of the dragon was red. The only other situation where this term is used, the color red is used, is of the second horseman, when the second seal is opened up, and that horse and horsemen are sent out by God to cause conflict on the earth and take peace away from the earth. But the redness of the horse, as I explained before, just is to distinguish it from the white horse or the black horse, or what is later the green horse, pale horse. And so the color doesn't have any spiritual significance, just more the color distinction to distinguish one from another. And so we can confidently say that the redness of the dragon just means that he was red. But let's think about the word dragon here. This is obviously Satan and the devil, as verse 9 indicates. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. So he is Satan. He is the devil. He is the one that is the enemy of God. But he's here called a dragon. And so let's think about how the Septuagint The Greek translation of the Hebrew Old Testament, where that uses the word dragon, where it relates to the Old Testament passages. So if we go back to Psalm 74 is one that I think we should take note of. We sang the 74a, and we will sing 74b. Psalm 74. Notice verse 13 and 14 in Psalm 74. Thou didst divide the sea by thy strength. Thou breakest the heads of the dragons in the waters. Dragons there is plural, so many heads related to many dragons. And that is one place where the same word that we see in Revelation 12 is used. But then notice verse 14. Thou breakest the heads of Leviathan. The word Leviathan is also has this word for dragon in the Septuagint. So this one Leviathan has many heads. Thou breakest the heads of Leviathan in pieces, and gavest him to be meat to the people inhabiting the wilderness. I think this is a very clear reference to the dragon of Revelation chapter 12 and Satan. And so let's read the whole psalm and think about this psalm as it might relate to the future persecution of the people of God. As we mentioned already, this is a psalm by Asaph, a maskil or a contemplation, a meditation of Asaph that he composed by the Spirit of God. And as we said, Asaph was the chief musician, one of the three chief musicians during the time of David, when the temple was not yet built, let alone destroyed. And he speaks as if it's right there burning in front of him and being destroyed in front of him, which the critics then say, therefore, this could not have been written by Asaph. But Asaph is clearly presented to us in the Bible, not only as one of the chief musicians who led the singing in the in the tabernacle and temple, but ultimately he is a prophet as well, one of David's prophets during the time that he reigned. And then if you notice, before we read the psalm itself, the title to Psalm 75. Portion of this belongs with Psalm 74. The portion that says, to the chief musician, Al-Tashib. If we were to look at the preceding psalms, we would notice, actually I think it's another section of the psalms, and I'd have to find them, but there's another section that uses this term, Al-Tashib. I think it's in the 50s, actually, Psalms 50s. But it means, do not destroy. Do not destroy. So in the title, the psalmist put this in the title as a call out to God that he would not allow his people to be destroyed. That is the intention of the note in the psalm title. And we definitely read Psalm 74 as it is a psalm that calls out to God, asking for his deliverance for people who are suffering. And again, I would suggest that this certainly fits very well with the time of the great tribulation yet to come. But let's read it and allow you to evaluate on your own. Psalm 74, verse 1 says, O God, why hast thou cast us off forever? Why doth thine anger smoke against the sheep of thy pasture? Remember thy congregation which thou hast purchased of old, the rod of thine inheritance which thou hast redeemed, this Mount Zion wherein thou hast dwelt. Lift up thy feet unto the perpetual desolations, even all that the enemy hath done wickedly in the sanctuary. In the temple. Thine enemies roar in the midst of thy congregations. They set up their ensigns for for signs. A man was famous according as he lifted up axes upon the thick trees. And now they break down the carved work thereof at once with axes and hammers, the carvings that are on the temple. They have cast fire into thy sanctuary. They have defiled by casting down the dwelling place of thy name to the ground. They said in their hearts, let us destroy them together. They have burned up all the synagogues of God in the land. We see not our signs. There is no more any prophet. Two witnesses having already been brought up into the heaven. One could say there are no more prophets during the Great Tribulation. Neither is there among us any that knoweth how long. O God, how long shall the adversary reproach? Shall the enemy blaspheme thy name forever? Why withdrawest thou thy hand, even thy right hand? Pluck it out of thy bosom. For God is my King of old, working salvation in the midst of the earth. Thou didst divide the sea by thy strength. Thou breakest the heads of the dragons in the waters. Thou breakest the heads of Leviathan, the dragon, in pieces, and gavest him to be meat to the people inhabiting the wilderness. Thou didst cleave the fountain and the flood. Thou driest up the mighty rivers. The day is thine, the night also is thine. Thou hast prepared the light and the sun. Thou hast set all the borders of the earth. Thou hast made summer and winter. Remember this, that the enemy hath reproached, O Lord, and that the foolish people have blasphemed thy name. O deliver not the soul of thy turtle dove unto the multitudes of the wicked. Forget not the congregation of thy poor forever. Have respect unto the covenant. For the dark places of the earth are full of the habitations of cruelty. And let not the oppressed return to shame. Let the poor and needy praise thy name. Arise, O God, plead thine own cause. Remember how the foolish man reproacheth thee daily. Forget not the voice of thine enemies. The tumult of those that rise up against thee increaseth continually. Remember how the foolish man reproacheth thee daily. Certainly words that would fit appropriately to the Antichrist who blasphemes God and sets up himself to be God himself. So the heads of the Leviathan in Psalm 74, the heads of the dragon, as the Septuagint would translate it. Let's also go to Job 26, Job 26:13. These are the words of Job. Sometimes you have to look at the beginning of the chapter to make sure that it's Job and not one of his friends speaking. But Job 26, verse 13 says, by his spirit he hath garnished the heavens, his hands hath formed the crooked serpent. The crooked serpent. Again, the word dragon here is used for the twisted or the crooked serpent. And then Isaiah 27:1. This I think to be also a very clear reference to the dragon of Revelation. Isaiah 27:1. If we were to look at some of the surrounding passages to this prophecy certainly seems somewhat out of place, as it speaks about this dragon, this Leviathan, this piercing serpent here, which is the same expression actually that was back in Job 26. It seems out of place, but when you look at the rest of the passages, there certainly is the shaking of the heavens and the earth, as we talked about, that being in the days of the Lord. Babylon also is prominent, and her destruction, in the surrounding passages. So if we think about those things, Psalm 27:1, as it speaks about Leviathan, the dragon in the Septuagint, certainly this sounds like Christ destroying Satan on that day. 27 verse 1, in that day the Lord with his sore and great and strong sword shall punish Leviathan, again, dragon, the piercing serpent, even Leviathan, that crooked serpent, and he shall slay the dragon that is in the sea. The sea, as we will talk about in Revelation, refers to the Gentiles. And so this dragon that's in the sea is destroyed or defeated by Christ with the great and strong sword, which Revelation shows comes out of his mouth. And so the dragon is not something new to the Bible. He's actually been prophesied about before. And as we noticed in Revelation 12:9, that this is dragon is identified as Satan and as the devil. And thirdly, as the serpent of old. Serpent of old. This is a very clear reference back to Genesis chapter 3, where the serpent comes in the garden and deceives Eve and Adam into eating of the fruit. So the deceiver that has been the enemy of his people all along, of God's people all along, is this dragon that is before us in this vision. Now let's turn back to Revelation chapter 12. Let's consider certainly one of the more challenging mysteries of the book of Revelation. The seven heads and the ten horns of the dragon and of the beast. So Revelation chapter 12. You'll notice in verse 3 again that the red dragon, having seven heads and ten horns and seven crowns upon his head. This again is the crowns, the diadems, as they are in the Greek, the actual royal crowns of kingship. As we have looked at all the crowns, the words translated crowns up to this point in Revelation, they've all referred to the victor's wreath, the garland, that was around the head of the one who won the race. And that's the kind of garland or crown that was there on the woman in verse 1 of chapter 12. But this is instead on the dragon, a diadem or a royal crown of royalty and of leadership. So the seven crowns that the dragon has are on the seven heads that the dragon has. And besides that, he has ten horns. Let's go to chapter 13, verse 1, as we notice the beast. And there it says, "And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns ten crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy." So, very similar to the dragon, there are seven heads and ten horns, but different from the dragon, there are ten crowns on the beast, which relate to the ten horns. It said, with the dragon, seven crowns on the seven heads, for the beast, ten crowns on the ten horns. And then Revelation chapter 17, where it pictures the whorish woman sitting on the beast. We read verse 3. "So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. It doesn't mention the crowns in this situation, but there are seven heads and ten horns, just as he had in chapter 13, and as the dragon had in chapter 12. And so what are these seven heads and ten horns? Well, we're going to see that this chapter, chapter 17, goes about explaining them, at least to some degree, what they involve, and we'll try to give an answer at this time as well. But before we do that, we need to go back to Daniel chapter 7 and the book of Daniel generally. Why we do that is because the beast that's described in chapter 13 of Revelation, coming up out of the sea, is very clearly, it has similarities with the four beasts of Daniel chapter 7, which also come up out of the sea. So Daniel chapter 7. Daniel, of course, was a captive in Babylon. He was a captive, but he certainly excelled amongst captives, gaining great political influence during the time of Nebuchadnezzar and Darius in the Medo-Persian Empire. And he was known as an interpreter of dreams, even though the dreams that he particularly had very much troubled him, and he didn't always have very clear understanding of all those dreams. But he was known as an interpreter, and he certainly, from a humble point of view, acknowledged God as the one who gave that interpretation. As we see the first of his visions here in Daniel chapter 7, we do notice the four beasts that come up out of the sea, and we'll just read through verse 8 here. Daniel chapter 7, verse 1. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head upon his bed. Then he wrote the dreams and told the sum of the matters. Daniel spake and said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of the heaven strove upon the great sea. The four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse one from another. The first was like a lion, and had eagle's wings. I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth, and made stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given to it. And behold, another beast, a second like to a bear, and it raised up itself on one side, and it had three ribs in the mouth of it, between the teeth of it. And they said thus unto it, Arise, devour much flesh. After this I beheld, and lo, another, like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl. The beast had also four heads, and dominion was given to it. After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, and strong exceedingly. It had great iron teeth, it devoured and brake in pieces, and stamped the residue with the feet of it. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had ten horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. Now the reason why, again, we're looking at Daniel is to understand what the heads and the horns of the dragon are. Here we have in this vision heads and horns of these four different beasts. De Burgh, who is certainly an excellent commentator, he thought that the seven heads of the dragon relate to these seven heads that are here on these four beasts. Seven heads because the third beast, the leopard, has four heads. And so the bear, the lion, and then the last beast, and you have seven heads all together. So he thought that the seven heads of the dragon would refer to all four of these beasts in that way. I would disagree with him because Revelation chapter 17, as it explains the heads and what they are, being mountains and kings, the kings, it says, five have fallen already. One is, and one is going to come, which shall be for a little while, and the eighth is the beast himself, the Antichrist. And so five have fallen already. Well, if you tried to do that with the four beasts, you have the lion head down, the bear's head down, and only three of the leopard's heads. You still have one leopard head still alive, but that was during the time of John. And so Greece wasn't in power at the time. It was Rome. And so the understanding of these four heads being from Daniel chapter 7 don't quite work. And so so let us then consider what these are. We know, and pretty common knowledge, that these four beasts refer to the four empires of Babylon. The lion is Babylon. The bear is the Medo-Persian Empire. And the leopard is Greece. And the fourth beast is Rome. That is well understood at this time. Again, much of this is understood now, which Daniel didn't necessarily understand, because history has occurred, and we see how these creatures relate to the historical evidence of what has happened, future to Daniel, the past to us. But we also are given help in understanding what this vision is in chapter 7, because Daniel has more than one vision that relate to these beasts. We have the dream that Nebuchadnezzar himself had, that Daniel interpreted in chapter 2, where there's an image, there's an idol with the head of gold, which relates to this first beast, which relates to Babylon. We had the silver arms and chest of the idol, which relates to the second beast, Medo-Persia, the bear. We have bronze being the thigh and the hips of the idol, which relates to Greece, which is the leopard with four heads here in chapter 7. And then we have, lastly, the iron legs of the image of the idol in chapter 2, which relates to this fourth beast with iron teeth, which is Rome. So we have the very clear parallels between those two prophecies, those two visions. But then we also have chapter 8. Chapter 8 speaks about a male goat and a ram. The ram comes first, and then the male goat. And these two images relate to Medo-Persia and Greece. So if we turn to Daniel chapter 8, verse 20 and 22, this one, unlike chapter 7, where we're still left in a mystery as to who these beasts are, chapter 8, verse 20 and 20 through 22 says, "The ram which thou sawest having two horns are the kings of Media and Persia, and the rough goat is the king of Grecia, and the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king. Now that being broken, whereas four stood up for it, four kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation, but not in his power." So the vision of Revelation chapter 8 very clearly identifies what the male goat and the ram refer to, the kingdoms Media Persia, and then the kingdom of Greece, which correspond then to the vision of chapter 7. They are different, but they're communicating much the same information in the two different visions. So that, again, is helping us understand how we should understand chapter 7 and all the visions of Daniel. So there is similarity, but there is difference between the meaning of the visions. So let's start with Medo-Persia. According to the various visions, Medo-Persia is, of course, the United Kingdom of Media and Persia. It was a joint kingdom where both the Medes and the Persians ruled. The Persian kings were definitely more dominant. In chapter 2, with the silver arms and chest, we can say that the two arms would reflect the Medo-Persian union, one representing Media, one representing Persia. With the bear, if we look at Daniel chapter 7, again, Daniel chapter 7, verse 5, instead of arms, it reflects on the legs of the bear, where it says, "Behold, another beast, a second like to a bear, and it raised up itself on one side." It raised up itself on one side. It seems to exalt one side of its body, that being the Persian side of the two. And then if we look at chapter 8 with the ram and the goat, the ram being the animal that reflects the Medo-Persian Empire, verse 3 of chapter 8, it says, "Then I lifted up mine eyes and saw, and behold, there stood before the river a ram which had two horns, and the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher came up last." And so, just like the two arms, but yet different, with the bear rising up on one side, exalting one side, and similar to that is the fact that the horns, one is higher, the Persian side, the Persian horn is higher than the other horn, Media side. And now let me also point out Daniel chapter 11, because this is not the only visions that Daniel has. There is another vision that comes in chapter 10 to the end of Daniel, chapter 12. And in this vision, there is further explanation of the kingdom of Media and Persia, but especially of Greece, that's to follow them. So if we look at chapter 11, verse 2, "And now will I show thee the truth. Behold, there shall stand up yet three kings in Persia, and the fourth shall be far richer than they all. And by his strength, through his riches, he shall stir up all against the realm of Grecia." And he's going to continue to talk about the kingdom of Greece. And so even this small section, which relates to Media Persia, also helps us understand the beasts of chapter 7. So let's think about the third kingdom then. In Daniel chapter 2, the third kingdom relates to the bronze thighs. There's no mention of four particular kingdoms in that prophecy, as we'll see in the rest of Daniel's prophecies of this kingdom, but it's just the bronze thighs relating to its less valued than the gold and the silver. But if we go to chapter 7, verse 6, with the leopard, Daniel 7, verse 6 says, "And after this I beheld, and lo, another like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl, and the beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it." So a reference to four heads. doesn't explain what those four heads mean and why they're all four connected to this one beast, but it does show the four heads. And then if we go to the next vision, chapter 8, verse 5 through 8, it says of the male goat, "And as I was considering, behold, a he-goat came from the west on the face of the whole earth and touched not the ground, and the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. And he came to the ram that had two horns, which I had seen standing before the river, and ran unto him in the fury of his power. And I saw him come close unto the ram, and he was moved with choler against him, and smote the ram, and brake his two horns. And there was no power in the ram to stand before him, but he cast him down to the ground and stamped upon him. And there was none that could deliver the ram out of his hand. Therefore the he-goat waxed very great, and when he was strong, the great horn was broken, and for it came up four notable ones toward the four winds of heaven." And then if we look at verse 21 in the same chapter, it says, "And the rough goat is the king of Grecia, and the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king. Now that being broken, whereas four stood up for it, four kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation, but not in his power." Okay, so this prophecy about the he-goat very clearly shows the four horns coming up out of the one horn, replacing the one horn. That then helps us understand Daniel 7, the leopard that has four heads. And then with this beast, let's also go to chapter 11, verse 3 through 4. Chapter 11, verse 3 through 4. And it says, "A mighty king shall stand up," that's the one horn on the male goat, Alexander the Great is the one, "and a mighty king shall stand up that shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will. And when he shall stand up, his kingdom shall be broken, and shall be divided toward the four winds of heaven, not to his posterity, nor according to his dominion, which he hath ruled, for his kingdom shall be plucked up even for others besides those." And what actually happened was when Alexander died, his kingdom was divided between his four generals. And so that historical knowledge mixed with these prophecies, very clearly God is talking about the kingdom of Greece, and it's being divided in four ways. So that helps us, of course, to understand the first beast to be Babylon, the head of gold, not represented in chapter 8 or in the final revelation there in chapter 11. And then Rome is the last of the four beasts. He would be the two iron legs, and does actually have a place in the last prophecy as it relates to the Antichrist, but that is kind of mixed. So even as we considered that, though, we noticed that the meaning of the heads change from one vision to another. Particularly, the four heads of the leopard of Greece represent the four kingdoms that come out of the one kingdom, based on the four generals. But in the very next prophecy, instead of heads, they are horns when it comes to the male goat of chapter 8. And so there's similarities, but there's at the same time differences. And we can't interpret one vision strictly that all the heads mean something, all the horns mean something. We have to take each vision for itself and its meaning. Here's another aspect that we also will reflect on more deeply later, but the little horns of Daniel chapter 7 and Daniel chapter 8. So Daniel chapter 7, verse 7 to 8. Daniel 7, verse 7 to 8. "After this I saw in the night visions, And behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth, it devoured and broke in pieces, and stamped the residue with the feet of it. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I considered this, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were 3 of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. This little horn is coming from the fourth beast, which would be Rome. But if we go to chapter 8, there is another little horn. Chapter 8, verse 9, where it says, therefore the he-goat waxed very great, and when he was strong, the great horn was broken, and for it came up 4 notable ones toward the 4 winds of heaven. And out of one of them came forth a little horn, which waxed exceeding great, toward the south and toward the east and toward the pleasant land. And it waxed great even to the host of heaven, and it cast down some of the host and of the stars to the ground, and stamped upon them. Yea, he magnified himself even to the prince of the host, and by him the daily sacrifices were taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. And the host was given him against the daily sacrifice by reason of transgression, and it cast down the truth to the ground, and it practiced and prospered. So again, if we did not understand similarities but differences, we might say that these two horns are the same little horn. But in chapter 7, it came from the fourth beast, Rome. In this chapter, it's coming from the second beast in this vision, which would be the third beast of chapter 7. So it's coming from Greece. So the little horns, they are similar, and we will see that they are similar, but yet different. The horn that comes out of Greece was Antiochus Epiphanes, and his persecution of the Jews is well recorded in Maccabees, and we will think about him because there are similarities between him and the Antichrist to come, the little horn that comes from the Roman beasts, but yet they are different at the same time. And so, we take this principle with us as we come to the book of Revelation, because it's challenging to understand Revelation. We certainly see Daniel as being prominent, but we must remember that there are similarities and yet differences when we come to the book of Revelation and from the prophecies of Daniel. So let's go back then to Revelation. So Revelation 12, we saw that the dragon has the same amount of heads, the same horns, as the beast does in chapter 13, and as the beast does in chapter 17. So let's go to Revelation 17, where it explains what these horns and heads are. First off, we should recognize the similarity. In some way, the dragon and the beast are related to one another. They have the same amount of heads and they have the same amount of horns. There's obviously a comparison between the two. And for that reason, let's actually go back to chapter 13 first, where that relationship is very clearly explained. Or at least in part explained. Revelation 13, where it says, verse 1, and I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. So there's a very clear relationship between the dragon and the beast, as the dragon gives him his power, his seat, and great authority. And verse 4, and they worshiped the dragon which gave power unto the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? And so the dragon and the beast definitely are related to one another. The dragon being Satan has influenced the beast and is directing the beast in what he does here on earth. Now let's go back to chapter 17. And let's consider first what the heads mean in chapter 17, verse 9 through 11. And here is the mind of wisdom, the mind which hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth. And there are seven kings, five are fallen, one is, the other is not yet come. When he cometh, he must continue a short space. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth, and is of the seven, and goeth into perdition. Okay. So the seven heads relate to seven mountains. Mountains back in ancient times were a very safe place to put a capital city. And so mountains ultimately are the capital cities of nations. Mountains are where you put that capital city because it's without helicopters and planes and missiles that we have today. It's very hard to conquer a capital city or any city that's up on a mountain where you have to fight up the hill and the ones defending it are fighting down the hill behind walls and so forth. And so mountains are places where you put a capital city. And these mountains, as it says, seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth. And so these mountains have a relationship to the woman. She sits, Babylon sits upon these mountains. These mountains support her throughout their time. But these mountains also relate to the kings, which capital cities certainly have relationships to the kings that rule within them. And the kings are said to be in a progressive manner. Five have already fallen. So this is giving us a historical view, not necessarily seven kings all at once, but there's a history that's being explained. Five of these have already fallen. One is, which refers to John's day, as he receives this revelation. There's one that's currently in place. Five have already fallen, and yet future to John's day. And the other is not yet come. And when he cometh, he must continue a short space. And then finally, the beast is the eighth. So there's a progression of these mountains and a progression of these kings. And so if you look at the history of those that supported Babylon, in other words, those that had control over the city of Babylon, I would suggest that this starts with Assyria. During Sennacherib's reign, he was the one that took the northern kingdom into captivity, northern kingdom of Israel. But when he went against Judah, God sent out the angel of the Lord, and he destroyed the armies of Sennacherib, and he had to leave. And he couldn't conquer Hezekiah or the kingdom of Judah at that time. But this same king, Sennacherib, was one that fought a civil war against his brother, who was in charge, in control of Babylon. And his brother was in league with other nations, and Sennacherib defeated them. And in doing so, he also destroyed the city of Babylon. And so he was very unpopular for that reason. He died sometime shortly thereafter by his own sons killing him. And then his son that replaced him rebuilt the city. And so I understand that Assyria would be the first of these kingdoms, of these mountains that Babylon sits upon, because it's rebuilt in the time of the latter Assyrian kings. And so if you trace who has control over Babylon, who supports the city, it would go from Assyria to Babylon to Medo-Persia to Seleucid Empire, which is the Greek Empire, and then to the Parthians. And those would be the five that have already fallen by the time that John is given the prophecy. Rome, then, would be the current one that is in place, that had control over Babylon, the one that is. And then after Rome, the Sassanid Empire took Babylon, but it would only continue for a short time because the Sassanid Empire moved its capital from Babylon and abandoned Babylon to Baghdad, modern-day Baghdad. And so it continues only for a short time as it supports the city, ultimately leaving her to sit and to become ruins. But then the beast would then be the eighth that would bring and revive the city back. So that shows a progressive nature. And the seven crowns being on the seven heads shows that the dragon is emphasizing the progressive nature of this empire, of this world power, through many empires really, that is contrary to Israel, contrary to God. But then in verse 12 of chapter 17, it says, "And the ten horns which thou sawest are ten kings, which have received no kingdom as of yet, but received power as kings 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind and shall give their power and strength unto the beast," and it continues. And so these are seven kings that don't have a kingdom as of yet. By the time John was prophesying, they don't have a kingdom. And of course, even at this time, unless the Antichrist is about to step out into the scene, they probably still do not have a kingdom as of yet, but will be given a kingdom for a short time with the Antichrist. These probably do relate to Daniel chapter 7. So if we go back to Daniel chapter 7, these ten kings probably do relate to Daniel chapter 7, where it describes ten horns. Daniel chapter 7, verse 7 through 8. "After this I saw in the night vision, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it, and it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had ten horns. I considered the ten horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots, and behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and the mouth speaking great things." So there are ten horns, which relate to ten kingdoms and ten kings. The little horn uproots three of those kingdoms, three of those kings. But after having established himself and having the lead over the other seven, he will then set up sub-kings under him to reign over the three kingdoms that he conquered himself, thus making ten. Or at least that's how I fill in the blanks about how the ten horns turn into seven horns with one little horn, and then become the ten horns of Revelation, ultimately. And these, of course, or at least I assume, relate to the image in Daniel chapter 2 with the ten toes of the image. These come from the fourth kingdom after it's mixed with the clay, the iron and the clay feet, But the ten toes would be the ten kings that join themselves to the beast and seek to conquer and destroy with him. And so, again, there is similarity, but there is differences. So the seven crowns upon the seven heads on the dragon emphasize the empires progressively throughout history. Five have fallen, one is, and one is yet to come. But the the ten crowns upon the beast would emphasize the ten kings that he rules over, the ones that he leads in battle against the Lamb and against the saints, and the ones that he leads in the time of the tribulation yet to come. And so the visions of God, certainly there may be questions even with this interpretation. This is what I would offer you as the meaning. There are plenty of other interpretations out there. Some fall for different reasons, but nevertheless, the Word of God is given to us to understand, and these visions do have practical, literal meanings behind what these symbols represent. It will be a time of great sorrow and destruction and heartache for the people of God. This will be a time when the devil and the beast are conquering and seeking to fully wipe out all who follow after the Lord. It'll be a time when the children will betray their parents, the mothers-in-law will betray their daughters-in-law, there will be conflict, there will be those that come in secretly amongst the righteous, seeking to take advantage of them. But also, as Daniel prophesies, it'll be a time when God purifies his people and makes them stronger in the midst of the challenges, and ultimately will come and save his people and decisively set up his kingdom forever and ever. And what a day, what a glorious day that will be.